Hey everyone, and welcome to this podcast, a Risky Biz Soapbox edition, the last Risky Business podcast for the year. My name's Patrick Gray. Soapbox, of course, is the podcast series we do here at Risky Biz, where we have detailed discussions with vendors about all sorts of stuff. Sometimes it's about their products, other times it's about the landscape as they see it. Other times it's about research that they've done that they want to promote. Soapbox is a wholly sponsored podcast series, just so you know. Everyone you hear on it paid to be on it. And this Soapbox edition is brought to you by Respond Software. And we'll be joined by Respond Software's co-founder and CEO, Mike Armistead, in just a minute to talk about Respond's tech. Mike has had an interesting history in InfoSec. He actually co-founded Fortify, the software security firm, before winding up at HPE as the VP and general manager for ArcSight, the poor fella. But he is free now, and he has co-founded the venture we are talking about today, which is, of course, Respond Software. So, what is the idea behind Respond? Well, to break it down into really simple terms, the whole idea is to take all the zillions of events, your existing security kit flags, and distill them down into meaningful alerts. Now, to put this into context, Mike says that during the 30 days in the lead up to the interview we recorded, his customers fed 2 billion events into the Respond software gear. Of those 2 billion events, Respond deemed 7 million of them worthy of escalation, and from there determined that 45,000 were malicious. But then, and this is the cool part, this only resulted in 350 incidents being raised by Respond's platform. So from 2 billion inputs to 350 outputs. So, you know, it's a great idea. Tune out the crap and look for meaningful correlations. Automate the decision-making around what's serious and what's not. You've got all this gear. Maybe you've got something aggregating it, but what's applying decision logic to it? Now, Mike sent me a list of security software that Respond currently supports, and we're talking all manner of IDSs, all manner of AV, EDR platforms, and a bunch of other stuff that gives their software the context it needs to make better decisions. That can be, taking things like Active Directory information, vulnerability scans from Nessus, Qualys, information from Splunk, QRadar, whatever. The idea is plug in all of your over-alerting crap into Respond Software's platform. Just turn everything up to 11, plug it all in, and it'll do a good enough job of correlating events that you'll only have to deal with what's real. Well, that's the pitch. And Mike Armistead joined me to tell you all about Respond's platform and to flesh that out a bit. And here's what he had to say.
Well, Respond Software is a new kind of technology that is decision automation. So what we're trying to do is emulate a security expert as they reason about different observable facts or evidence that they see from security events. Our technology will take in observable things from different alerting technologies or sensors like IPS or EPP or even EDR type of sensors. And we've built in the judgment of security experts into our reasoning engine or intelligent decision engine, whatever you want to call that. Some people call that an expert system. And what we produce is a vetted case of an incident. So what we don't show is just any old alert. We wait until there's enough evidence that there's a likelihood of something being malicious before we actually produce anything that we would then give to typically an incident responder who then can take this well-formed case and be able to act on it quickly.
Yeah, so I mean, we've spoken about this before, and I think the way that I could think, the way that I think to describe it is like, you're almost like the glue that sort of, joins some of these things together, like whether that's endpoint protection and network IPS or whatever IDS, it joins these things together and then starts assigning, probabilities to whether or not something is real or not. I mean, is that a good cartoon-like description of it?
Yeah, no, I do think it is a good description of it. And what I'd add to that description is it isn't just taking some of these sensors, but as you know, the second part of any kind of security equation is not only, hey, did something alert me on this, but should I care? And by the should I care, that's a lot of what's always been referred to as contextual information. The kinds of things like is that alert in a place where I have vulnerabilities? Or is that a asset that is more critical than other assets that I should care about? Or maybe even there's threat intelligence that's telling me that there is a campaign against my industry, and maybe I should tune up to that a little bit more. So it is that glue that's taking not only the signals from these sensors, but also the signals that you as an organization would have, or at least your environment, and being able to put those together so that you could actually have something that made some sense, and you know, you could give it to someone to then remediate.
It's funny because I often, you know, see these vendor presentations, you know, whether or not it's a network IDS or whether or not it's endpoint protection, you know, whatever the technology, they always say, well, you can take the output from our technology and correlate it against, you know, the output from your other technologies and get high quality signaling. But the technology to actually do that is pretty thin on the ground. And that's kind of where you're coming in, right?
Absolutely. And our background is actually from the world that started a lot of that thinking, which is the world of the SIEM. And, you know, that is meant to take in a whole bunch of information and do some correlation to it. It ends up, though, that that technology over time really has been good about collecting things, but it's pretty thin. And I'd even say a little too specific, overly specific, which makes it brittle in the correlation side of things. What we've seen over the last couple of years is some newer technologies and, of course, a lot more processing power that's enabled us to use mathematical models that have been used in all sorts of different other kinds of industries, like healthcare for doctors putting their expertise into a system, or the financial services world has done a lot of this as well. And we can now apply this to security monitoring and event triage to kind of give that expertise and put that in there and do really heavy duty correlation. So not like just correlating one or two things in a little bit of context, but 50 or so checks that we might make, or really a good way to think about it is questions we might ask if we see this thing happening or an expert saw that thing happening. And that is the check that our system can do, and of course do it at machine speed and machine consistency and machine scale.
Let's just go back to SIEM for a minute there, because I do find this whole topic pretty interesting. I mean, you used to run ArcSight as well, you know, so this maybe is like, you know, your atonement, I guess, for having run ArcSight. But SIEM is one of those technologies, isn't it, that it is for the larger companies, and unless you're throwing serious attention at it, it doesn't really get you very far. I mean, SIEM is something that you've almost got to be pretty SIEM-centric as an organization if you expect to get value out of it.
Well, we like to say kind of it's one of the big boy tools, and it's not really disparaging towards the people that might use it in their smaller teams. It's much more about exactly what you said. A SIEM's a platform, and platforms need to have intelligence built into them, and that in the SIEM, it's going to be about the rules that are placed in there. And those rules and the whole way it interacts with the architecture and that can be very complex. And some things can grind that down to a halt and not make it practical. And other things, just it's just hard to write something that complex and keep it up to date. And that's probably the harder thing. So you're constantly having a cost. And a lot of times it's hidden for a lot of organizations because the benefit is pretty clear. But the cost about, I have to have a security engineering team and that one that's up on not only my stuff, but new things that are coming out all the time, you know, is difficult. And it isn't something that someone can take lightly. So I think the promise is really great. The promise is collect a bunch of information and then hopefully find something that I wouldn't normally find by correlating information. I think there's just newer, better ways to do that instead of writing some rules. You can do this in mathematical models like we have. And even those mathematical models, there's a difference between, you know, machine learning doing something about for a pile of unstructured data versus machine learning and AI that's more like an expert system that knows what it's looking for and takes it and assigns a likelihood or a probability that something's happening.
Well, you lasted 7 minutes until you said machine learning. So, you know, for that, I commend you. But, you know, how much of this is a machine learning play versus just applying, you know, standard sort of weightings to various types of alerts and triggers?
Well, I think, you know, machine learning is a pretty broad term. So that's why it took me almost 7 minutes to say it. Because it's, you know, I always like to liken it to someone saying, well, I wear clothes. And, you know, there's lots of different kinds of clothes they may wear. You know, it's a technique. And that's how we definitely think about it. You know, we use the right technique for the right problem. And, you know, in part what we do is a mixture of a lot of different techniques. And there is basic kind of, we look for patterns. We do use some machine learning to pick up different patterns or things over time that we're observing. But we also use different kinds of mathematical models. For example, an expert system and something that automates decision making. The math behind that is in something that's, I'm sure I don't mean to just throw out a term there, but it's Bayesian math. That's different from, for example, the deep learning type of algorithms that say a Google would use or other people in security even use to discover an anomaly. And so we're, you know, really there's a mixture between using things that the right tool for the right job. And so you definitely, and I'm sorry it took, you know, it should have taken me 15 minutes, but you know, even the 7 minutes was good because
in today's security marketplace, that was unbelievable restraint. So you know, we're sort of talking about this as like kind of like SIEM technology, but not really SIEM technology. And I'm guessing the difference here is going to be that, you know, you can take something from Respond and maybe just plug it into some existing tech you've got, and it's not, you know, in and of itself a giant project. I mean, is that the idea?
Absolutely. The probably one of the main things that we tried to accomplish with the product was to give someone a really quick return on whatever they had to invest in it. So a quick return on investment, if you will, on that. And so not, they wouldn't have to think of a months long project to build intelligence into a platform or write playbooks or do something, you know, this and that. It was to kind of get that out of the box with you. And, you know, let me say this. It, you know, you mentioned SIEM, and it's not, we don't see it as a replacement to the SIEM technology. As a matter of fact, we leverage the core infrastructure that people have, and that might be a SIEM. But, you know, when you think about what people do with the SIEM is they set it up, they write the rules, they then write those rules to give alerts to a person that's sitting at that console watching these alerts roll by. We liken ourselves more to that person that's watching those alerts roll by and then piecing together the different points. Like you said, the glue between different events happening or different contexts being out there. And we pull those together. And so we already know that's a manual process today. It's just what we use people to do. And it ends up people aren't that great when the volume gets high. And the volume is definitely high right now for different sensors throwing off alerts to organizations and security.
It is, you know, and there was that great interview that, you know, Greg Shipley very kindly did with us on Risky Business some time ago, where he said, you know, as an industry, we've got to move beyond this point where we say, you know, as a security technology, great, we've pumped out an alert, job done, let's go get a cup of coffee, yeah. Right? Like, we got to move beyond that.
Absolutely. I mean, it is about responding and to something. And so, you know, what we can do to take a load off of a person that they can then use their ingenuity, their curiosity, their, you know, the way a person is really good at attacking a problem. The more we can do that for an organization that is constrained by the people that they can hire and retain and use, the better we'll be. And it just so happens that software can do things that are more repetitive, way better than a person can. And so, you know, it's about augmenting the team so that they aren't doing the things that, frankly, people are not good at, and the machine is doing those things, and vice versa. The machine isn't trying to do something that it's not capable of doing either.
I suppose an uncharitable description of Respond software would be to say that you do alert tuning.
Why are you going to be uncharitable?
Well, no, I mean, it's just, I mean, that's something that's so essential, right? But it just doesn't sound very impressive in marketing terms when you say, just throw your alerts at it, we correlate and actually tell you what to worry about. Like that's, you know, that's something that I'm sure a lot of people listening would find quite appealing, but it's just not like AI amazing, you know, like defeats APTs.
It is true. And I was just kidding you. But the fact is, I think we're doing one little step beyond that is that we're not just tuning it to give you another alert. We're really trying to take the alert and all the things around it. And it may be that there are 1,000 of the alerts going against the same thing. So they make up the same incident. So Respond analysts.
So you're turning alerts into a story, right? Like you're turning alerts into an actual incident report with maybe a bit of a timeline and stuff.
That's right. And we're letting people handle situations instead of handling events or alerts. And now they got a situation or a story, like you said. I think it's a great way to put it. What we have to just do a good job of is making sure we are telling them enough of the story and our reasons why we may have escalated something so that they can take it and do something with it. So it's not a half-baked story.
Give us an example of that, right? Because nothing, you know, nothing speaks louder than sort of case studies, use cases. So what, you know, what's a really great example of where, you know, something like Respond would come in super handy?
Yeah, I mean, I have a number of case studies, but one that comes to mind was we were at a national healthcare provider. They had a full SOC. So it wasn't a small team. It was actually quite a large team. And we're even monitoring the network telemetry and doing network intrusion. But what one thing a machine can capture better than a human is there was a low and slow type of attack going on. So there was a beaconing out to a known bad site, and our Respond analyst picked that up. And there wasn't another, and we did not alert on just that first one. It wasn't, you know, critical enough to kind of make the grade. But when we saw it 3 weeks later, that's when the system did that. Now, no human, you know, could really remember that. I mean, heck, I have a hard time remembering what I had for lunch. And to think of, you know, remembering that there was a beacon out to some, you know, it's a little packet going out to some site a few weeks ago, that's not usually going to do it. And so that's something that, again, the software can retain within it.
I just would have thought like beaconing out to a C2 is always going to raise an alarm though, right?
Well, it raises an alarm, but in a sea of how many alarms, you know, and you get a lot of those kinds of alarms. So when should you care and when shouldn't you? And so when you start to see it though happening in a pattern, that's when you start to have to say, you know what, I should investigate that. You know, that's something, you know, one thing, Patrick, you bring up that's actually a key part to this is the transition that our technology is helping people make, I think, is something that humans do naturally, but you know, our technologies don't. Which is, it's not black and white, you know, and you see an alarm and you, like you said, it's a C2 kind of signature that gets tripped. You get hundreds of thousands of these things. And our thing is more based on a likelihood of something being malicious. So you may have to wait for the pattern to emerge. You know, give you another example, because since you asked for some of these use cases, is, you know, often we will, our incident will include maybe 10,000 different alerts that were happening. So like, for example, you know, malware itself isn't necessarily because everyone has an EPP or some sort of next generation antivirus or something like that. And they can quarantine pretty well. But what's really interesting to incident responders is how fast might be the malware spreading, for example. And then how quickly can you get that signal within that? And that's another thing that a machine can pick up really quickly is that we see the thing spreading very, very quickly. And maybe kind of another case is that even if the anti-malware had cleaned up the system, you see something else from that system, you know, that starts to be a notion of a repeat offender.
Okay, so of the use cases that you've just picked up, like that's a good one. And that's where I was thinking it'd be handy is if you see maybe some weird alert from one, it might not be going to a known C2, but just something a bit funny. And then 3 weeks later, you know, something funny again. I can imagine that's where this would be quite useful.
Exactly. And, you know, and another way to put that is even though something may be quarantined, often the adversaries are putting more than just what the known malware.
Right? Like they've used their stage one tool to like get maybe a shell, and then they've dropped on something there that the EPP's missed, and then you know if you're bubbling that through the console, that'd that'd catch it. That's great. Go on.
Sorry, just one other case. The thing that we're really excited about in our system is that it also takes sensors or the information from sensors from multiple places. And we call this integrated reasoning, but it's again what humans do pretty naturally. But it's, hey, if I see something that tripped an alarm in the network, and I also see an endpoint, maybe it'd be an EDR type of solution. If I see it from two sources, I'm going to start to think that that's a little more serious than if I just saw it from one. Or I could count on that. The likelihood basically goes up when that happens.
Well, and you can start elevating lower quality signals, right, at that point. So if you see something on the network IDS, and then you start seeing like not straight up alerts, but maybe logs suggesting that, that client over there has started running a bunch of PowerShell scripts it doesn't normally run that may or may not be malicious. Like you tie those two things together, you've got a pretty strong signal, but on their own,
Exactly. And if you think about it, going back to our current technologies, to save our people from having to see too many things, one of the most common rules that I know from my background that got written in the SIM was, I only want to see criticals. Yeah. I want to see the critical alerts.
Exactly. And that's a great way to not see real stuff.
Yeah, right? And the example you just gave is exactly right. You may something that is just tripping a medium or a low even alert on the network from an IPS, but there's a lot of funny stuff going on in the endpoint. Those two together absolutely make up something that needs some attention. So it's that kind of thing that our system can do, and it can do pretty effortlessly, really.
Now, I should explain too to the listeners, like we do a little bit of selection here, like as to, I mean, we don't 100% decide on absolutely every sponsor. We don't put a great deal amount of thought to it, to every single one. But generally speaking, we like to, we like to kind of pick who sponsors these segments. And the way this one came about was Stefan Chenette over at Attack IQ was like, have you seen Response Software, what they're doing is pretty interesting. And it makes a lot of sense that he finds it interesting as well, given that he's in the business of doing attack simulation against enterprises to test their controls. And he often sees, the biggest problem that they have is that they haven't really glued together their alerting that well. And just by coincidence, like I think a couple of days later, your marketing team reached out and said, hey, is there any sponsorship going in Risky Business? And we said, and that's why I asked our sales guy, I'm like, yeah, no, like really get back in touch with these guys, because we had other vendors who wanted it, right? So that's what kind of drew me to wanting to do this one with you guys. Look, I'm mentioning this because, I've got a question for you that I often have. I often have the same question for Stefan, because he gets to see which controls succeed and which ones fail from an attack simulation perspective. But given that you're, gluing together alerts from a bunch of different tech, you get to see, the stuff that's mostly providing the higher quality signaling, the stuff that tends to work best. We spoke, at some length before we did this, like, a week ago or whatever. And surprisingly enough, you said the most underrated bit of, intrusion detection kit is actually network IDS, particularly when it's deployed to catch east-west traffic, right? Now, I found that pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we found it interesting too, because we had our own biases coming in, and the security world is just such a running to the shiny object kind of, marketplace, at least from the marketing standpoint. And so many people have this core technology, and it includes antivirus too, to tell you the truth. And there's, as we like to say it, there's gold in them thar hills, yeah. And it's just a matter of getting the signal out from all the noise. And there's a lot of good work that an IPS vendors have put into their signatures, and they're always producing new signatures and things like that. And our technology can even take and account for, is this a new signature? Is this one that was 4 years old and we should, shouldn't worry about it so much. So it's, I think you're right. And it has been kind of eye-opening to us too, that it's just properly architected, the IPS can provide just a lot of information, and it's just sifting through the things and using it in the right context to the organization to be able to pull out the incidents from that.
Well, you almost kind of want to deploy them to do the reverse of what most people like to do. You want to turn them up. You want to turn up the number of alerts they're triggering on, because, you know, if you've got something acting as a filter, it doesn't really matter anymore, you know? So
yeah, I mean,
that was the old IDS tuning thing, right? Was you try to reduce stuff that isn't relevant, but then, hey, maybe something that you've tuned out becomes relevant later, and then you've got a problem.
Exactly. I mean, it's you know, one of our little adages is like, you know, hey, turn it up to 11.
Yeah.
Because we can handle it. And also, but it does go against, like I said, the probably the status quo we most run up against is this idea of I've got to narrow things down to match my capacity and people that I've got. And this respond analyst, you know, just has a different capacity equation to it. And you don't have to turn things down. In fact, you should turn it up so that you can keep your visibility high.
You also mentioned that, you know, it can take into consideration things like, you know, do I have vulnerabilities in this part of my network? And I'm guessing that you are taking feeds from things like Tenable scans. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, we'll take vulnerability scans from like Tenable, from Qualys, from, you know, open source, from vendors, from all sorts of things.
How are you plumbing that in? Is that like through some sort of cloud API? Because I know Tenable has like Tenable.io, right? So do you just feed it an API key and off it goes and collects that information magically, or?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you do have to do some work there, so you have to hook up the API. But we could take that. We could just take a report that you have and feed that report in. I mean, we're pretty flexible about being able to do
that.
Yeah,
but come
on,
you know someone's going to forget to do that every week.
They are, but the beauty of our system is that it's going to remind you, hey, if I had a vulnerability scan, I could be a lot smarter than what I am right now. And that's actually, it's a funny part of our product too that we've had to rethink, which is you know, you get it going and it does as best job it can, given the visibility. And I think you and I talked about this, Patrick, too. I like to talk about it like if you hired a person and you hire that person and they may be an expert, but you got to teach them in some ways about your environment and about things that they should know in order to be even better. And that's what you do with our technology, too. And you're right. People don't always remember that. So we've put in place the ability that you could see, hey, did you give us, you know, that last vulnerability scan for this area, or hey, how about your critical asset list, or at least, you know, something like that, that we can help be smarter about and make a better decision, because those are facts that would help any system, a person.
Yeah. Where do you want me to be paranoid? Like on which
exactly.
sections of the network? That makes sense. So, I mean, you know, do you have a typical customer, right? And I know something like this, it's kind of got pretty broad appeal. So I don't know if you're going to have a typical customer, but have you found that certain types of organizations, certain sizes, certain verticals are sort of gravitating towards this tech?
I think we do. And I'd say there's really three that gravitate the most. So the first is just groups that are, you know, they have three or four people on the security team. They're not going to get five next year, you know, and they want to do more, but they're a little bit frustrated and don't really see a way that they can.
So the tiny drowning team, got it,
right?
That's one.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, tiny drowning team. You know, the other is we do get a set from the ones that still might be tiny or they might be big, but are using a managed service really to do their level one kind of triaging. And sometimes that's really good for organizations, but sometimes it's just so generic that they feel like they always have to reinvestigate everything they get there. And they also, those MSSPs can't really know the context, you know, in detail because, you know, their business, they have to actually make money and do that too. And their business kind of leads them towards doing things more standard. So we see people that are kind of in that second camp too, that are paying a lot of money for someone else to do this, but they're just not super happy with the results.
Well, this is, I mean, I've always said this about MSSPs. Like I got actually hired some years ago to investigate for a company that had very deep pockets. They were looking at getting into the MSSP market. And, you know, I went and did some market research for them. And I just found that basically every single CISO I spoke to did not trust their MSSP, like for doing monitoring, they did not trust them at all. They were only really paying the money for ask covering purposes and compliance purposes.
Checkbox. Yeah.
Exactly. Total checkbox service. And because nobody expected anything good out of their MSSP, the MSSPs all wound up competing on price. So it was a race to the bottom, right? Like, I am not a fan, as you can probably tell. I'm not a fan of MSSPs, like people relying on MSSPs for monitoring. I mean, there's some vendor-led stuff now that might be kind of interesting, but yeah, I mean, you'd have to be mad to like depend on it, right?
But even the vendor-led stuff that you're referring to is usually very focused on their stuff. So
yeah, totally. You sign up for CrowdStrike for them to look at the CrowdStrike stuff.
So anyway, you're right. So those two, like Drowning Team, kind of reliant but not all that happy with the amount they're paying for the MSSP. And then the third group ends up being someone who just is going to, maybe they're redoing the SOC or they're redoing an area and they don't want to do it the old way that has a lot of people. They want to do it in a new modern way with all this automation that's kind of out there. And so they're looking at this, and that might be someone who's fairly mature actually, is one group. The other group of that might be someone who's just got a completely different problem. Like they have an OT environment that they've got to have a security kind of monitoring and triaging going on, but they can't find the expertise or the people that would be able to do that. And so they're looking for automation to kind of help with that. And I think the model we're seeing in that third case is really, you know, can you do this with today's automation? Instead of a team of 30, can you do it with a team of real experts that are more like 8 to 9 or something like that. And it's, that's probably the third bucket that we end up in.
It's funny that, cause you know, there's all these, there's a proliferation of like next gen SIEM companies, and that's their pitch as well, which is like, you know, the SOC of tomorrow is going to have a lot less people in it.
Yeah. And you know what? And I think it probably will. And if you think about, you know, I wouldn't say our technology can just solve all these problems. I mean, there's a lot of what that next gen SIEM group comes from is a lot of good anomaly detection. Some of them hail from the UEBA kind of world, which is, you know, bringing in the users and are they doing anomalous activities in that? And then of course, you know, there's our other brethren kind of in this area that might do orchestration on the downstream side. And, you know, it's there's a lot of automation out there, and it really gets down to, you know, what your organization can take on. So back to that, do I need a security engineering team? And that really, the drowning people have a tough time with that one. And do I have the expertise to me and kind of budget to do this over time?
Mm.
So
I mean, you know, that's a pretty diverse group of users though, but I guess what you're saying is that like, you know, it's for anyone who's just, you know, drowning in alerts, whether that's small shops or big shops who are just trying to save some resources and get maybe people in the SOC, if not firing them, then getting them doing more useful, higher value stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, and it gets back to that core notion of why we chose this as the area to do our automation is we at the core of our offering, we chose to go into putting our automation in this area because for good reason, organizations have chosen people to be the center of their security operations because people are good about connecting dots and things at certain scale. And the thing that's happened over these last years is just the scale has gone beyond what people could do very well.
2018, a lot of it is about trying to manage that scale problem.
Yeah. And you know, and the fact of the matter is it is the scale because we've grown our security operations by buying things that alert us on where the adversary has gone. And those guys have become more and more sophisticated. So you're having to have more and more. And what's the count, Patrick? It's something like 50 to 70 vendors in most, you know, security operation, you know, organizations. I mean, they just have, we bought all this stuff and now we've got to start to use it. And people are, again, the people side, we're the glue. And that glue is just getting harder to do. And I think there's a whole class of things that are pretty well understood. Network intrusion, in a sense, you know, some of the things that we do that we could, you know, you could apply some automation on, like our product, and take that off. another use case, user story that we almost always get. And, you know, my background too is, you know, I was in app security for many, many years as a co-founder.
Oh, you worked at Fortify. Yeah, Fortify. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
I was actually, yeah, a co-founder of that. And so we often, you know, we would always get the line from people or software developers going, oh, yeah, we know everything that's in our make file to kind of pull the whole thing together. And inevitably, they wouldn't.
No.
And it's just payment operations, you know.
But that matters more now, right? Like that's because especially when you're dealing with like all of these web apps that are deployed, like they're internet facing, right? Like, ugh.
The great thing that's happened over the years in software has been that it's now more building block than it ever was ever before, right? It's not, you don't build things from scratch anymore. You build them with blocks and it's very helpful. You get products really fast. And in fact, we're leveraging even in our own infrastructure, some of those things that came out of Google and Facebook and these things, because they, you know what, those guys know how to do high processing type of things. And so you build things like that. And in security operations, like you know, very similar, people will swear they know how they've architected, say, you know, back to this example of their IPS network, and that we'll drop our analyst in, and the analyst first thing it'll say is, you know, I'm only seeing signals from here and there and not over here.
Yeah.
And we've actually had we've had customers that had bought components that was doing that. You talked about east-west traffic kind of thing with their IPS. They had bought that component. They thought they had that up and running. The first thing that they noticed from the respond analyst was it wasn't getting any information about east-west traffic, and it really wasn't set up to do that. So right away, you know, we kind of count that check. Hey, we give them a benefit because we told them what was being used and what wasn't in their own organization, even though it didn't, you know, result in an incident.
I mean, this is interesting, right? Like, this is the same reason that I mentioned Attack IQ before, right? Like, it's that same, it's like a different way to identify that same problem, which is like what's not talking to what, you know? It's, it's a real thing.
And over time, I think we will be able to even give our customers a real good view of, like you had mentioned, those things that are adding to the evidence of an incident and things that aren't. And that should be a way to rationalize some more of the spend for, you know, these poor organizations that are spending a lot of money.
All right, Mike Armistead, thank you very much for joining us to talk about your latest effort in the field of security, Respond Software. It's been very interesting. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Hey, enjoyed a lot, Patrick. Thanks again for the discussion.
That was Mike Armistead of Respond Software there. Big thanks to him for that. And you can check out Respond Software's platform at respond-software.com. Finally, a security company that doesn't end with a .io domain. Very refreshing. And that is it. That is the last podcast being posted to risky.biz this year. I'll be back on January the 9th with a regular weekly show. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.